And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, we've got less than 2 weeks for the election to come to an end. We're in the middle of the election as we speak. It's no longer accurate to say so many days to election day, because there isn't an election day. There's an election period. But the election period will come to an end on the 3rd of November, which is...
So to speak, they're going to be, depending on what state you're in, it may not come to an end until the 5th or the 6th.
On the counting, but you can't vote you can't vote anymore.
Right.
So at this point, this weekend, more than 50 million people have already voted. I mean, it's one thing for the Republicans, Trump, to say, you know, it doesn't count, don't vote, it's all fraudulent, what have you. 50 million people have already voted. That's a lot of people. How many people do they expect to vote to begin with? If it's a gigantic vote, 160 million will vote. So any way you look at it, about a third of the vote is already in.
It is. And there seems to be high enthusiasm on all sides of the vote.
What I've been concerned about this whole period of time is that people will vote, but the vote counters won't count the vote. It's important who counts the vote. And to me, in many states, the way to make sure that a vote would not be counted that was really legitimately cast would be to say, well, the signature on the envelope, because you have to put a signature on the envelope in many places to guarantee that it's an authentic vote, the signature on the envelope doesn't match the signature that's on file. And I thought to myself, if I look at my own signature on any given day, it looks very different, or it could be said that it's very different than what it was on a different on another day. So there could be endless bickering about this, and in any case, the count could be delayed forever. So I thought that it was really a big event on Friday in Pennsylvania when the Supreme Court ruled that in Pennsylvania you cannot check the signatures. It's not authorized by law. Did you notice that?
Yeah, well, it is a big deal. And once again, this shows the importance of the courts and who controls the courts, because that third branch of government has a great impact on elections, which, of course, affect the other two branches of government.
You mean the courts?
The courts, yeah. And as I've said many times here, what happened is that several years ago, the Republicans fell asleep. They were very good at legislative elections and gerrymandering and things like that, but they fell asleep when there were three Supreme Court vacancies in Pennsylvania up for grabs, and the Democrats swept all three. And since then, it's been a Democratic majority of either 4-3, and now it's 5-2 on the Supreme Court. And actually, this ruling was 7-0. So it was pretty clear. But the Supreme Court said that previous laws had requirements that the signatures match, but the new law that was enacted in a compromise with the between the Republican legislature and the governor, the Democratic governor, which expanded mail-in voting for where you don't have to have cause, you just can ask for mail-in votes, didn't have that requirement. And so the Supreme Court said you can't reject ballots based on challenges to the signatures on the backs of the envelopes. And in any event, they said, the people who would be checking have no expertise in signatures. And as you said, signatures change over time. People have been registered maybe for 30 or 40 years, and their signatures from 30 or 40 years ago may not look like what they are today. So it's a big victory for the Democrats, and it's a big victory for the voters that people's votes won't be challenged needlessly. The Republicans are really, really hurting in terms of what they've been trying to do in stopping the vote or limiting the vote, and even with the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania. There was another court case also decided on Friday by the Commonwealth Court, the Intermediate Appellate Court, which said that under the election law in Philadelphia, people are going to places where they can apply for their absentee ballot. They can get their ballot right then and there and then vote and turn their ballots in. And under the election law, by definition, this is not a polling place. And so therefore, they ruled that the Republicans did not have the right to have poll watchers because they only have poll watchers at a polling place. And what people were worried about is that Donald Trump has been urging some of his more thuggish supporters to come to Philadelphia and try to observe, quote unquote, the process. What they really want to do is try to intimidate people. So that failed as well, that effort. Now, I have to say, we're not out of the woods yet. This week, I've gotten word about poll watching. I signed up to be a poll watcher. I've done it many years. The Democrats have been asking people. And a poll watcher is someone who's inside the polling place. An observer is someone outside the polling place. But they are worried a great deal in Luzerne County about what may happen, that they're getting vibes, so to speak, that there's going to be some sorts of efforts at the polls to challenge people or poll watchers or observers. Something might be happening down there. And they're trying to organize people in order to make sure that the process goes smoothly. You know, Luzerne County got a bad rep a few weeks ago when it was discovered that someone had opened the military ballots or the foreign ballots and tossed a couple of them into the trash can, a handful. I think there were 7 or 9 total. But they never got thrown out because the election officials were watching for this. It was a temporary worker, and they fired the worker. But this week, they did catch a case of potential voter fraud when they found that a Republican had tried to get a ballot for his mother using her signature.
What's wrong with that? Why can't you help your mother vote?
Well, the problem is that his mother died 5 years ago.
Oh, I see.
So, you know, the graveyard vote, so to speak.
It's a demographic. It's a definite demographic.
A demographic and a growing one.
It's right. It's exactly. There are more. It's right. There are more than before.
There always will be. So that's kind of what's happening in Pennsylvania. And they're also worried because I got a second call from the Democrats saying we're looking for people to observe the count after the election. You know, Pennsylvania got permission from the U.S. Supreme Court to continue counting for 3 days after the election, as long as the ballots are postmarked by Election Day. And they don't want any problems with that either. So people are going to be working, I think, 2-hour shifts while at election headquarters. They're going to be counting these mail-in ballots. We'll have to see what
happens. What I know is that in Pennsylvania, they expect a 10% increase in votes over the number of people who voted in 2016, so that 6,800,000 more or less will vote. And of that, nearly 1 million have already voted. And of that million, the Democrats have a lead of nearly 600,000.
Well, you have to be careful on the raw count of Democrats because there are a lot of Democrats who voted for Trump. So you have to be a little bit more careful, although people do think that the Trump voters are holding off until Election Day and not sending things in early. But we'll have to wait and see. I noticed that this week Trump Trump said he's voting in person this time instead of mailing his ballot in.
Well, he's always in Florida, so he can do that.
And that's a sign that he's worried about Florida. Remember, he carried it last time. This time it seems to be up for grabs. He was in the Villages this week, you know, that place, that affluent retirement village that had a couple of the white supremacists in their golf cart parade, if you remember.
I do, yes.
Yeah. And I noticed in his speech, none of them were wearing masks, or hardly any of them were wearing masks.
Well, they're not threatened because Trump's aura will keep the virus away.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
it would be good if he could spread that aura over the rest of the country, since the rest of the country on Friday of this week had more cases of coronavirus illness than since July. 80,000 new cases.
Right. You know, I was just going to say,
We're turning the corner, right?
Yeah, well, turning the corner. You know, you talk about Trump's aura down there with people not wearing masks. Maybe by the next election, they'll be joining that vote from the cemetery that the guy in Wilkes-Barre wanted to have.
Yeah, it'll be part of the growing demographic.
Oh. Yeah, but no, getting back to this, you know, we had the debate this week, and Trump got on there, and he lied again about a couple of things. You know, this turning the corner.
No, he didn't lie about a couple of things. He kept lying. He lied about a lot of things.
Yeah, a lot of things. Okay, yeah. But one of them, that we're turning the corner. You know, we're having a cure. It's happening. It's still going to disappear. It just doesn't comport with reality.
And, well, at the beginning of the week, he announced that the scientists are all idiots. Right?
Well,
it's people are tired of listening to these people. They're idiots.
Yeah, well, there's no... he hasn't believed in science for a long time.
No.
And then there...
Science is not something you have to believe in, you know.
Yeah.
You either land on the moon or you bypass the moon. That's the way it works.
Yeah. I keep saying it's not nice to fool Mother Nature.
Yeah.
One of the other big lies he talked about is that that he's got this better healthcare plan. That he's got this bigger and better healthcare plan.
Yeah, but he can't tell you what it is because somebody will steal it.
Well, it's coming in 2 weeks. He's been saying this now for 4 years. The Lincoln Project put together a list, a showing of all the times he has said this since 2017. You know, it's easy to do. Our plan is going to be bigger and better. We have it in 2 weeks. It's going to be coming. We'll have it next month. And he just keeps doing this and doing this and doing this. It's sort of like when he's going to release his tax returns. You know, as soon as the audit's over. The audit's over.
Said that at the debate as well. He went through that again.
Yeah.
And in the final analysis, I don't even know why he bothers. Everybody already knows that he's a failed businessman who doesn't pay taxes.
Well, he does pay some taxes to China.
Well, all right, to China. Also to Turkey.
Turkey, India.
India.
Couple of those places.
Yep.
Yep.
Well, now, we have the Comey Barrett thing coming up, right? She'll be up this weekend. The Congress, the Senate is meeting in an extraordinary session, and the Democrats can't stop her from being confirmed. They don't have the votes. The vote is scheduled for Monday. And she'll probably be inaugurated Monday night or Tuesday morning. So what do you think about Ms. Barrett, Comey Barrett?
Well, they're in a real hurry for a couple of reasons. One is, the longer this takes, the more that comes out about her and her background. There's no question she's a bright lady.
So what? So what if she's bright? She has crazy
ideas.
That
doesn't mean you deserve to be on the court. She appears to have lived in a bubble and worked in a bubble of this ideology and theology that she works with, and it does bleed over into her her judicial opinions and her writings. But you know, I think we need to talk about the process. She is another one of these nominees of this organization run by a guy named Leonard Leo.
The Federalist Society.
The Federalist Society that started about 40 years ago or thereabouts. And it originally was to gather people of conservative legal thought. They had debates and things like that. But what it really has morphed into is a lobby for judicial nominees to control the courts in order to press this dystopian view on America, you know, to halt progressive legislation and progressive social ideas. And what we've found out about it for years is that it's being financed by, among others, the Koch brothers, the libertarian idea that tries to stop any sort of regulation which would cut into their profits, no matter how much the legislation would protect society from some of the bad effects of their businesses. And I think you've done some looking back into Mr. Leo and some of the things that are happening with him.
Well, they're interesting. You know, they have an enormous amount of money at their disposal. The Federalist Society publicly spends upwards of $50 million, takes in upwards of $50 million a year. They use that to recruit law school students so that they have people like Gorsuch and Kavanaugh to appoint to the various judgeships. 200 judges appointed by Trump, almost every one of them a Federalist Society member. Talk about packing the courts. That's packing the courts.
Yes.
But in addition to that, Leonard Leo himself has a set of secret organizations that are dark money organizations that last year took in $80 million, and not last year, 2 years ago, the last year that tax returns are public. In that period, that year, they took in $80 million. Nobody knows from whom. Nobody knows exactly how they spent it. But it's clear that they spent it on lobbying for these conservative judges to be appointed. They paid for the campaign to get Gorsuch appointed, Kavanaugh appointed, and now Comey Barrett appointed. And that's where they spend their money, completely secretly. They raise it secretly, they spend it secretly, and he's in charge of it. And that's in addition to what the Federalist Society does openly.
Yeah, and also, it's not just Supreme Court justice, it's the Court of Appeals justice.
Yes, all of them.
And the thing is, if you remember, Bill Clinton said, and Barack Obama followed up, is we want judges that look like America. These judges don't look like America. I don't think any of the 50 courts of appeal judges that Trump nominated and McConnell pushed through, I don't think any of them are black. Very few of them are women or other minorities. And the district court judges tend to follow suit. So they have a basically a 1950s look, a pre-civil rights look at what America should be like. And of course, the danger
is... I think they have an 1890s look to what America should be like.
The danger...
I really think that's important, because this woman, Comey Barrett, if you follow what she has written, not what she might in the recesses of her innermost heart believe, what she has written and how she has decided things publicly, she really has a point of view that would say that unions are illegal. They're unconstitutional, which is exactly how they were considered, restraint of trade, in the 1890s. Down the line, she has a point of view that says women don't have rights. Forget about abortion. There's no real reason why women should have the right to vote if you follow what this woman thinks is what the Constitution says.
Except in her case.
Well, yes, of course. There's always every racist has a best friend who is a member of the race that he hates, right?
Right.
So she's the same way. She's the exception that proves the rule. And her whole impetus on saying, well, there's originalism. You got to go by what the guys who wrote, because they were all guys, who wrote the Constitution believed at that time they were writing. And that's how you have to interpret the document. But Madison believed one thing and Hamilton believed another thing on very many critical issues. Who do you listen to? Who do you follow?
They believed in slavery.
They believed in slavery. That's exactly right.
The woman's place is in the home, that you don't have women judges, you don't have women lawyers. Yeah.
And only people, white men of property, should be permitted to vote.
Right?
And they had no point of view. They punted on how to regulate the internet. Now what do you do?
Or whether people can own machine guns.
Or whether people can own machine guns. That's exactly right. So you can only uphold her point of view to jurisprudence if you believe that there is a revealed truth that is inerrant, that is always right, that is not susceptible to be questioned, that can only be believed in. In other words, if you are a fundamentalist religious believer.
Yes.
And that's why it's significant what her beliefs are, her religious beliefs are. Because her religious belief in the existence of inerrant truth makes her jurisprudence inhuman. Just that simple. These things all count. It's wrong to say that religious beliefs don't affect, or any beliefs. Judges do what they believe is right. There's just, the law does not exist as an independent abstraction. It exists. It comes into being because of struggle. The laws that get framed are framed through struggle. Everybody knows that. That's why there's lobbyists.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've said the law has a moral component, but it doesn't necessarily follow a particularly religious point of view. There are ethics and morality involved. You know, this week we had an...
It doesn't follow a religious point of view. I'm just saying that in her case... Yeah. Her particular approach to religion informs how she will approach law.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. But we had a case this week, a follow-up of a case. It came out in the debate the other night about these children that have been separated at the border from their families.
The 5,000 and some, yeah.
Well, yeah, and a judge a number of months ago said to lawyers who were involved in the case, you must go back and you must find the parents of these kids. And some were the ACLU lawyers and some were the government lawyers, and they came back to the court this week and they said, Your Honor, we have to report to you that in 545 cases, we cannot find the parents of these kids. These kids are now effectively orphans due to the processes of the United States government in family separation.
That's not a crime against humanity, right?
It's a sin.
Yeah.
It's unspeakable as to what they've done to these kids.
And
under
that
the name
policy
of government.
We read about this a couple of weeks ago. That policy was promoted by Jeff Sessions. It was promoted by Rosenstein. It was promoted by Stephen Miller, and it is endlessly defended by Trump, who at this last debate said that the policy of what he calls catch and release was a stupid policy because only people with low IQ show up in court after they've been released, and that the 99% of the immigrants who are released into the society, they don't show up. Only the lowest IQs show up. In other words, you don't follow the law unless you have low IQ. But of course, it turns out that 83% of the people in this category show up, and not for one case trial, but for every single hearing they show up. Because they're not trying to do anything except better their lives. They're not trying to be thugs and gangsters, and they are not thugs and gangsters. They're decent, hardworking people who want to lead a life for themselves and for their family that isn't menaced. They don't want to be fugitives.
Right.
It's a disgusting person, this Trump.
Yeah, well, you know, and what we've seen and what we're seeing is that there are people who do, you know, even though we have political differences, who've come up and stepped up and have broken with Trump and the Trump Knicks. This week we had Michael Steele, who had joined the Lincoln Project, came out and did an ad saying that as former member of the Republican National Committee.
He was the chairman.
Chairman of the Republican National Committee. He's not only not voting for Donald Trump, but he's voting for Joe Biden. we had General McCreevy say that previously. And we've got almost every day someone coming out and saying the same thing. We've had a couple of people, like Mitt Romney said he didn't vote for Trump, but he wouldn't say who he voted for.
Well, there's a man of courage. There's a guy right on the forefront. Right.
Yeah, the governor of Maryland, the Republican governor, Larry Hogan, who people have been touting, said, well, I didn't vote for Trump. I voted for Ronald Reagan. Now, that, give me a break, all right?
That's a vote for Trump.
That's a half-hearted thing.
Yeah.
But we are seeing this come out. And by the way, the Lincoln Project put an ad up on Times Square on the billboards there about Ivanka and Jared Kushner, and they got threatened with a lawsuit. And they're telling Ivanka and the Kazowitz law firm, you know, Trump's law firm there, to go pound sand.
I saw a picture of those billboards. The Kushner billboard is just a quote from Kushner. It's just that the quote is so atrocious, nobody would want it to be known. But it is a quote from Kushner.
Yeah.
You know, what he said was the Democrats, that New York deserved the deaths that they were getting from the virus.
Virus, yeah. The blue states, we don't want to bail them out.
Yeah.
We don't want to help them out. You know, we've talked about, you know, the Federalist Society and the funding and stuff. If you remember, for years I've been saying that Hillary Clinton was wrong, that it's not a vast right-wing conspiracy, that it's a vast right-wing infrastructure. And, you know, actually it's kind of both. But we had a little peek into this. We found out this week that Sean Hannity, Fox News is basically helping to run the interference for Trump. Sean Hannity came out with a book a couple months ago, and the Republican National Committee spent about $1 million buying up the book to put it on the bestseller list. This is how they've done this.
He can say best-selling author Sean Hannity.
Right, right. They have their own press, Regnery Press, things like that. And it's all interconnected, and a lot of it is getting back to the Koch brothers and their funding and other big name donors.
And definitely it's the Koch brothers' strategy. I mean, that's what we're seeing here. This is the unfolding of the Koch brothers' strategy. Restrict democracy. Don't let people vote. And do what you want to do for corporations. Let them run wild.
And meanwhile, we're back into the, we keep coming back to the book that we talked about, Nancy McLean, Democracy in Chains.
That's right. That's exactly right.
And we can't promo that book enough. People need to read it to understand what's really happening.
We'll come to the end of this week. It's this week and next week, and the election period comes to an end. In Pennsylvania, it's easier now to vote ahead of time, and there's less chance that your ahead of time vote will be ignored. It'll be counted. So go do it.
Yep, I'm headed out to a gathering right after we finish the show, and we'll just see what happens. It's getting down to crunch time. It's crunch time.
See you next week.
See you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place. This program is supported by Argosy Bookshop of New York City, 116 East 59th Street, just down the block from Bloomingdale's. Old and rare books, prints and maps, members of the International League of Antiquarian Booksellers, founding members of the Antiquarian Booksellers Association of America, members of the Appraisers Association of America, on the web at Argosy Books, ArgosyBooks.com. Check them out for books, autographs, maps, and prints.